Welcome to Parenting Matters on Nashville Catholic Radio, WBOU 100.5 FM, sponsored by the Family Life Office of the Diocese of Nashville. Your host for the program is Dr. Parr Donahue. Dr. Parr has years of experience in pediatrics and parenting. He was named the Senior Pediatrician of the Year by the Tennessee Chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics in 2014. Dr. Parr is the author of four books, including books on parenting entitled Messengers in Denim, The Amazing Things Parents Can Learn from Teens, and Tools for Effective Parenting. Visit Dr. Parr's blog at www.parentingwithdrparr.com. Here's your host, Dr. Parr Donahue.
Welcome to Parenting Matters on WBOU 100.5 FM and streaming throughout the world at WBOU.org. Our topic today, beating the stress of COVID-19 virus. Many of you are familiar with our guest today. He's been on our show several times before, Dr. James Wellborn, practices teen and family counseling in Franklin, Tennessee. I'll introduce him shortly, but first my monologue. It's no secret that we are all social beings. We need each other, and others need us. We have the need to need each other as well as a need to be needed. In her blog, Sarah DiGuglio explains to be happy, we need other people. Physiologically, she says, not having a social support system is a source of chronic stress for our bodies, which leads to more heart disease, cancer, and an impaired immune system. Our brains actually function better when they're interacting with others and experiencing togetherness. Human nature's default mode is to be social. People have an innate and very powerful need to belong. And even being with people who drive us crazy is an opportunity for growth and transformation, which can be a source of sustained happiness. That all sounds well and good, but what are we to do when we are deprived of engaging with other people? When we have lost dear friends or our jobs, when we can no longer play or watch sporting events, see movies, or attend concerts. If we are lucky enough to work from home, how can we do the work and homeschool our children? How do we keep God in our lives when we can no longer go to church or synagogue? With all the toxic news imparting to us over TV and social media channels, how can we go on? Of course, I turned to the net for the answers. The first thing that popped up was a blog telling me that a certain type of CBD, an oil derived from the cannabis plant, commonly known as marijuana, quote, works in minutes instead of an hour, relieves stress, is mood enhancing, relieves pain, has a superior absorption method, is completely organic without one synthetic modified ingredient, and tastes good, end quote. Now, not a chance in the world I would recommend that or use it. I would caution every listener not to turn to drugs of any kind or alcohol to solve problems. If a person thinks they need medication, he or she should visit a physician, preferably a psychiatrist, to help make that decision, offer guidance, and follow-up care. And just because a substance is completely organic does not make it better, safer, or even non-poisonous. Socrates died from drinking completely organic hemlock. And many other drugs, heroin, opium, for example, even aspirin, are organic. However, I did find a great article dealing with stress, this one also by life purpose and coach Sarah Fabian. In it, she said, I know there are many things far beyond my control, earthquakes, tsunamis, the rain, the sunset, the stock market, political changes, economies that are going to collapse, this pandemic included. But there's one thing I can say, surely I can manage, and that is my inner world, my actions, my thoughts, and my emotions. The way I respond to whatever happens outside my total space is totally up to me. Then she tells us there are five things we need to remember. First of all, be grateful. Appreciate the medical staff all around the world, those doctors and nurses who take care of the sick and face sleep deprivation while most of us are currently stuck in the comfort of our homes. Remember, too, the workers in the grocery stores, the postmen, and those who deliver online groceries and other goods. Second, she says, stay grounded. Life doesn't always go as planned. A panicked mind can't see and think clearly, and worries are not real. Neither is fear. At least it's not here yet. Third, life isn't just about doing, it's about being. Most of us are currently getting the gift of time. Spend quality time with our loved ones. Call old friends. Read the books on your list. Play with and talk with your spouse and your children. Ask them questions. Listen to what they have to say. Cook, bake, and eat together. Play games, watch TV, declutter your home, clean the garage, and spruce up your garden and lawn. Sleep, recharge, pray, meditate, and journal. Reflect on what's important and what makes you and your family truly happy. Remember, we are all one. In today's world, there is scarcity, hunger, poverty, division, and war. But through all adversity, we are all one. Remember, too, that unity, collaboration, support, service, compassion, and empathy have never been as essential as today. Ask your neighbors, especially older ones, if they need anything before you head to the supermarket. Volunteer your time or money. Make sure your friends and neighbors have what they need. If possible, share food, essentials, and other necessity. Finally, Sue Fabian reminds us that challenges lead to growth. What doesn't kill us strengthens us. Real sustainable growth happens during challenging time that stretches us, not when everything is nice and easy. Now is a time for growth, evolution, change, creativity, and connection. So let us be the light we want to see in the world. Let us take a big leap from fear to love. But there are some real problems that need addressing. To answer this compelling difficulty, let's turn to our guest, Dr. Wellborn. He is a clinical psychologist focusing on adolescents and families. He received his PhD from the University of Rochester in New York. He is a columnist for Brentwood Homepage and the author of Raising Teens in the 21st Century. He sees teens and families at the Brentwood Complex of the United Methodist Church. He and his wife have two adult children and live in Brentwood, Tennessee. I'm sure you will enjoy his discussion. Welcome, Dr. Wellborn, to Parenting Matters on WBOU 100.5 FM and streaming throughout the world at WBOU.org. It's a great pleasure having you back on the show.
Thanks, Parr. It's good to be here. That list of all the streaming throughout the world is kind of intimidating. So
I know. I have to put it in. It's the funnest part of the show. And you know, one of our...
So in Zimbabwe, they may be listening in
they
Zimbabwe.
May be listening. One of our... the matter of the president of WBOU is from Italy, and he was home visiting his family over there, and he turned it on, and he listened to us in Italy. So that's great. Well, there's a lot of talk about, so why don't you start by telling us and telling our audience how they can handle this homeschooling project. I know my wife and I would have felt terribly intimidated and unprepared to try to teach our kids, especially when they were in high school.
Oh, yeah.
How can it be done?
Well, it can be done. It cannot be done unless you establish a homeschooling program, and that's just not what's happening these days. And so the one thing to keep in mind is that what you're doing is trying to keep your kid engaged in academic stuff. And what that then really means is a kind of important thing to have in general is some kind of structure to the day. Our days were structured... the kids' days were structured before this shutdown by the rhythm of school and by the rhythm of the work week versus and the school week versus the weekend. And all of those natural kind of rhythms that were built into the cultural stuff are gone. And so as parents have discovered, their kids have just kind of filled all of that space with doing all kinds of stuff. And then they were waiting to see, is school going back? Is it not going back? Are we going to get stuff from the school? So there's all of this kind of everybody's waiting around to find out what was going to happen and when shutdowns were going to occur and all that kind of business. Well, we're right now square in the middle of all of that. And the thing that becomes important is to set out a schedule. And this is very similar. It can be very similar to the kind of schedule, but a little bit more detailed, that you were already doing when you were setting up, like, when they were going to do chores and when they're going to have responsibilities and maybe when they had study time. So one thing is to get that schedule set up. A colleague of mine, Stacy Jagger, and I have actually started a series of columns with the Williamson Homepage online media. And every, like, twice a week, we're writing columns on the different aspects of parenting through this COVID shutdown. And the most recent set of columns is one based on kids and one based on teenagers, is how to go about thinking about setting up a schedule and what are the important pieces of that. And the academic pieces is an important part of that. And so the minimalist approach is to set aside some time, a couple of hours at the very least, where your kid is going to be doing doing academic stuff. Now, most of the schools, for public schools, the school districts have provided different kinds of worksheets and forms, and individual teachers have been kind of shoring up all of the education that came to the point in which the shutdown happened. And so there are worksheets and forms and resources and that kind of stuff. So there are specific things that school districts are providing, but you will have to find now a time in the day to make that set for your kid to be doing that. And the initial thing that's going to happen is that you're going to run into trouble with that, because your kid is going to have been doing just what they wanted to for probably a couple of weeks as everybody is waiting for this. And then when you start putting some structure around that, they're going to push back against it. So one thing is to set up a very specific schedule. We've got some suggestions about that in the columns about ways to do that.
And let them help with the schedule up too.
Well, with children, it's not as important to do that. It's going to be more important to say, here's what you're going to be doing, to find things. To not have to repeat this too often, but there's some specific resources that we've got in these columns about how to go find information if your school is not providing it and you want to help your kid develop particular academic skill areas. There's all kinds of resources on the internet. We've got some that we mentioned, and the idea about how to go about doing that. So for children, it's more about setting that time up, and it probably takes more structure for you to do that, where you'll have to have that and put it in front of them and do some monitoring. With teenagers, it's going to be more about setting that time aside and indicating they need to be doing something academic. And some of that's going to be the stuff that's already available. But you might also decide that you're going to put in some other stuff, like working on extra math skill development or working on extra history or social science kinds of stuff. There's all kinds. The beauty of the internet, the amazing part of it, is the scope of free academically related material that's all over the place that you can find and have your kid go and find. But for teenagers, it means working with them about that. What do you need to work on? What missing assignments do you have from the period of time that led up to the shutdown? That kind of thing.
You know, I was listening to the radio yesterday. Actually, it was on TV, and this lady was a pediatric psychiatrist and infectious disease specialist or something like that from someplace in New York, you know. And she said that parents need to remember the three R's. I thought, well, reading, writing, arithmetic. And she didn't say that. She says, no, reassure, reward, and regulate. Mm-hmm. And she said, reassure the kids that you love them and that they can do this. Mm-hmm. Reward them when they do well, and then regulate their time and efforts they put into this thing.
Oh, sure.
And I thought, ain't that what parenting is all about?
Well, yes. and also, those are really important categories of things to do. But what we often run into as parents is, how do you translate that into something concrete? And that's where some very specific kind of suggestions or ideas about how to do that are. Thinking about the stuff that professionals like this physician and like therapists, and we think about this stuff all the time. And so for us, it kind of comes naturally. It's translating that into, for a parent who has rightfully had the structure of academics be determined by the school, it's now shifted to them, and you're not used to thinking about this. And you're also not used to thinking about getting your kid to do stuff other than their homework. Mm-hmm. And so it's a different kind of demand that's happening, and it creates also a different kind of conflict, because not only is there your kid wanting to not have to do stuff because they're quote-unquote not in school, so why should I have to do this? But also, you're jammed into the house 24/7 with the social isolation. And so that also creates a lot of conflict and tension that interferes with actually doing productive stuff.
You know, it's another thing I think of is when the kids are in school, they're in school and they have their school hat on.
That's right. That's
and when
right.
they come off the bus, that
that's
hat
right.
goes flying and they're mom and dad.
That's right.
How does a parent adjust to being teacher one minute and the next minute she's mom, or the kid being student and now the next minute he's kid?
Well, it's tough, and this is very stressful, but it's a subtle kind of stress. It's not the same kind of stress as some kind of obvious pressure that's put on you. It's the stress of disruption. It's the stress of lack of routine. It's a stress of lack of the schedule that we didn't really appreciate was just automatically going on. So one thing you do is you put a schedule in place, and so you impose a kind of structure around things so that at least there's clarity about what you're supposed to be doing with your time and how much time you're going to spend on this or that or the other. But the other piece about this from the parenting side is it's really important for parents not the – it's like that pressure that we have in general that you're supposed to be all things to your kid. Well, it's wonderful, and there's sometimes when it's necessary to do that, but it's not reasonable to expect that you can be both a teacher and a chef and a recreational therapist and, everything and a parent and. And so it's really important to appreciate you're not going to be able to reproduce the school day. Your task in part is to try and keep your kid oriented toward academics and kind of continue their being exposed to academic stuff. And that actually has some, depending on what happens traditionally during the summer, that's an important thing even during the summer. And so we don't necessarily always talk about that, but there's this phenomena that is called summer learning loss that happens to all kids.
Yes.
And so we've just got an extension of that, but an additional kind of disruption that's going on with that. And so the idea is structure and scheduling and putting some blocks of time where you have clear expectations that you're on your kid's part. I'm going to be doing this during this time and that during this time, and here's the time for me to do my own stuff.
How does this differ from just, a lot of parents do homeschooling full-time, all the time? Some of them are teachers, most of them are not. Yeah. How does this situation differ from that situation?
Well, they have programs and materials and curriculum mm-hmm. that they use, and their kids have their own – they've already established that routine too. See, the key here is the disruption of the routines. That's where the stress is coming from, not from the kid's perspective. Then another level of stress is their lack of being able to have the social contact with their peers, which is really important to mm-hmm. to kids and teenagers. And then there's another level of stress, which is kind of indirect, which is the parents worry about all of the stuff that is going to happen with the economic shutdown and all of the changes. So there's stuff that's just kind of floating around all of here. With homeschooling families, they've already got that routine in place. And so that's one less stress that they have. I don't mean that they don't have Sure. stress from this, but they've already established that. They've got kind of things going. They also have experience with that. Parents who have – the rest of us who have kids just come home, we don't have the experience of having set up the day for learning during this time and lunch and free time and activity time and all that kind of business. And so that's why one of the things that we reference in the columns that we wrote about – Stacy and I wrote about this – is you can go to some of the homeschooling sites, and we've got some links to that, and get their schedules. And so mm-hmm. you can see how a homeschooling family does their schedule and use that as a structure for trying to put that in place.
I'm going to ask our listeners to get a pen and a piece of paper, and at the end of the show, I want you to tell them how they can contact the newspapers.
Oh, good. Out. Okay, yes.
Well, now, do you think parents have to set up a classroom?
A space, the external structure and signals mm-hmm. become really important. Mm-hmm. And so a space where you go and do something provides a kind of clarity, and it reduces the conflict. And so if you have a space that's designated for this at the table, at the desk, someplace, mm-hmm. but when you're doing academic stuff, this is the place to do that, especially during this disruption time. That becomes really important, because otherwise the kid's laying on their bed and going through YouTube, especially teenagers, although sometimes children, unfortunately,
yeah.
And doing stuff all in the same space means that the boundaries kind of merge with all of that. And so saying now's the time for this can be clearly identified by having a space and a particular structure around that when they do that. A time of day, an expectation about what's going on, and a place for that to happen. Especially for something like school, academic stuff.
Do you think it's difficult to teach, like if you have a third grader and a sixth grader and a ninth grader and you have them all dumped in this room and you're trying to – how do you do that?
Well, the one thing you can do is shift the schedule. And so like we always do with parenting, you have to kind of figure out how to work things in, because you can't do everything at once. And so that's the other benefit of a schedule for you as a parent, is this is when I'm going to require this of this kid and that of that kid. So one thing is just making the time to do that. The nice thing about teenagers, by and large, is that they can be self-sufficient. And so you can have to spend more direct one-on-one time with a younger kid to be able to keep them focused mm-hmm. and to actually shift from one task to the other. With teenagers, you can set them to work and just check in on them. And so sometimes there's overlap. The thing that I think about with the third and sixth and like 11th grader kind of notion also is that the academics, almost all of us can do the academics for a third and even a sixth grader.
Sometimes.
Although sixth grader starts to press it given what they're doing. But I'm telling you, when you get into high school, it's like, so that the issue about how much you can be helpful is another thing. But again, there are online resources of various sorts that can your kid can access to be able to, especially the math and the social sciences kinds of stuff. There's lots of stuff that allows them to get tutorial help for free. The most widely known and well-recognized would be the Khan Academies, khan.org. But Khan Academies has astonishing lectures and information about information all the way from the earliest math all the way into college-level stuff. And so there's resources like that are available, too, that kids can access. I'm not necessarily saying parents do that, although you can, but it's about kind of directing your kid to do this and do this unit, and let's see what happens with that kind of thing.
Okay, well, I think we talked about schools enough right now. I think there's a couple of other areas I wanted to ask you about. One of the things that I always enjoyed, and I still do it today, is being with my family, my wife, and my kids.
That's a great luxury. All of us have that luxury.
Well, it's true. It's, you know, and I miss the kids when they're gone.
Yes, but did you spend 24/7 for like 6 weeks straight with them? That might cure you of your.
So, what can people do to not have to,
get
or to
some
make this
space.
Thing work?
Build in some space from each other is one thing, and so then. But I
have a lockup ward.
Yes, maybe. Well, the thing that was subtly striking to me during the early part, like probably in the second week of this, is that without really, really appreciating it, I noticed as I was driving through my neighborhood that I saw parents, what I assumed were parents, and their teenage children walking. Now, that was so striking that I realized, wait a minute, because I just never see teenagers and their parents out walking. That doesn't mean that people don't do that, mm-hmm. but not in with the degree that's happening now. This has created an opportunity not just for driving each other crazy by being locked in the house together, but also about actually reestablishing and reconnecting in a forced sort of way, but with the opportunity to have a kind of connection with your kid that's been really difficult with all of the scheduling that's a part of modern families, both for parents and for kids, about all the coming and going that happens. And so the one thing is about making sure that you appreciate that you can take advantage of this. And so in the same way that we talk before this about having family time that you do stuff together, this provides a more concentrated opportunity for that, about doing things together. And that's both spending time together and being together, but it's also doing stuff like going out and walking, but also like fixing meals together, about having movie nights. One of the columns that we wrote was a kind of tongue-in-cheek column about isolation movies and all the ways that parents could use those to like deal with their kids as a family activity. But so there's different kinds of things you can do in that with regard to that.
I saw we have neighbors up the street from us. They have four kids. The oldest one's a high school senior, and the youngest one I think is probably about third grade. And they're always off. The three boys, and they're always out there. And playing back, shooting
even
back
before this, doing, even oh, before the shutdown. Yeah.
But the other day, all of a sudden, I see this old boy riding down the street, and this bike, and back up, down the street, and back up. Pretty soon, I looked and here, the rest of the family was coming. We all went on a scooter. Dad was walking. Mom was pushing her stroller.
Right.
And they were on the side. They went for a family bike ride, but it was found this boy circled back.
That's really funny. He's like, would y'all come on?
Yeah.
But sure enough,
so
he
nice
circled back.
It.
Exactly, but
yeah.
He circled back,
yeah,
okay?
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
like.
We used to take our kids for a bike ride every weekend. We'd go someplace. And in Wisconsin, they have these bike paths that are old railroad tracks.
Oh, yeah.
They take the trails and they go for miles and miles and miles. And we used to do them and it was so fun because you could be together, but you're still separate.
Yeah, yeah. In Nashville, we've got the wonderful greenways that are everywhere, just amazing. Yep. And so that's the idea of those spaces. Although the challenge about running into the numbers of people who are out doing this, because what else have they got to do? And so we've got all the distancing stuff and that kind of business, but it has that a possibility.
Hey, our clock is way off today. And it says it would run out of time. So do you have that number where they could...
The Williamson homepage is literally williamsonhomepage.com. And there's going to be the columns you can do by searching for either James Wellborn's name or Stacy Jagger's name. We wrote that. And also at my website, www.drjameswellborn.com, drjameswellborn.com. And the blogs there have all of the columns that we wrote and information about all this kind of stuff.
Good. Thank you very much. Well, it's about time to wrap this up. Thank you, Jim, for coming. I really appreciate so much what you're doing here. And thank you to our listeners. Without you, we wouldn't exist. You are listening to Parenting Matters on WBOU 100.5 FM and streaming throughout the world on WBOU.org. Before I sign off, one quick story. I went to a one-room country schoolhouse. We had one teacher. She had 8 grades. I don't know how she managed to do it, but she did. She taught and we learned. In addition to her teaching, she also attended the coal fire stove. She supervised recess. She heated our lunches on top of the stove, and when it was really cold, we'd bring potatoes and we'd put them in the ash pin and we'd bake our potatoes in the ashes. They were really, really good. She cleaned the boards after school and swept the floors. If she wanted to make copies, she had no laser jet printer, no Xerox, no mimeograph. She had a hectograph. Did you ever hear of hectograph?
Oh, yeah.
A hectograph is like a 8.5 by 11 auger dish, and it has gel in it, like auger. And she had a special pencil or pen. She would write the original copy, tip it upside down, rub it on, put it on the auger, let it sit for a while, and gently take it off. Then she put a new paper on top of there, and smooth it down, let it wet, take it off. And she could make 4 or 5 copies from one. And that was enough because we'd had... All of our classes only had 1 or 4 students. When I told my kids this, they said, Dad, there wasn't much to learn back then. You know, math hadn't been invented and there was no history. Well, it's true, we didn't have as much to learn as they do because kids today learn so much in grade school, more than we learned in high school. But the point, that's not the point. The point is that our teacher survived and so did we. And many of us even went to college. And the point if a woman with only 1 year of college could teach 8 grades, and if we could learn, then it's very likely that we can all survive this crisis. Now I have some good news for you. Because of all that parents and students are going through these days to do what needs to be done, there will be no homework. Still, if your family did not have a chance to hear this show and gather all Dr. Wellborn's wisdom, get them together, go to my site, www.parenting-matters.com, and listen with them. And if you'd like, click on homework and let our readers hear any suggestions you have to help them get through this mess. And if there's a topic you would like to hear discussed in Parenting Matters, let us know. We'll find an expert to tell us all about it. Thanks for listening, and may God continue to bless you and your family.
Thank you for listening to another edition of Parenting Matters with Dr. Parr Donahue. Parenting Matters is produced and recorded inside the studios at the Catholic Pastoral Center. Thanks again for listening to WBOU 100.5 FM and streaming at WBOU.org.